Welcome to the Business Marketing Clubcast, a podcast for B2B marketing people who want to get on and stay ahead in what we all know is the single toughest profession in business. There ain't any others. We'll be offering insight and inspiration from B2B marketers on a key current topic, advice from experienced CMOs on how to climb the career ladder, and some top networking tips. So please stay with us. I'm Dave Stevens, a B2B marketer and also chair of the Business Marketing Club Network. In this episode, I'll be speaking to brand and content director of Capita, Sarah Ford, and also strategy director of marketing agency Omobono, Simon McAvoy, about where they stand in the debate about whether to focus B2B marketing on strategy or tactics. Also, marketing and communications lead at L&T Technology Services, Utkarsh Srivastav, will share some great B2B marketing examples and what he's learned from them. And Carla Rivershaw will share a key lesson that she's taken on the journey to being CMO of document technology business Turtle. All that, and I'll explain how to take advantage of the Business Marketing Club's events programme. So stay tuned. Some businesses ask their B2B marketers to focus on the bottom of the funnel, short-term tactical activities to drive commercial sales are what we need to do. Fewer businesses ask their B2B marketers to focus on the top of the funnel, something more long-term, where branding is the thing. Being strategic is important, and it's the commercials that will follow. The reality, of course, is that we all need to be doing both. But how do you balance your budgets and time between the two? I've been speaking to two marketers to get their view. First, I'm joined by brand and content director at Capita, Sarah Ford. Sarah, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Perhaps we should start with a bit of a lowdown on what Capita is focusing on right now.
Absolutely. So Capita at the moment is focusing on its long-term transformation. So 18 months, 2 years ago, a new CEO came on board with a new agenda, a new plan for the business, the opportunity to grow the business in different directions for the future, and with that, the opportunity to transfer many parts of it. So that's what we're focusing on right now at Capita. And as my responsibilities as brand director and corporate content director are very much about that top of funnel, then looking at our brand is where we're starting and where we've been sort of putting our attention for about the last 6 to 7 months.
And can you give me a sense of how that feels in the wider marketing organisation? So how much resource is being focused on the brand as compared to some of those kind of more short-term quick wins?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, it's quite interesting at the moment because I think we had a new chief marketing officer come on board as well earlier this year with a very different and a very hungry ambition for marketing at Capita, which has actually meant that pretty much everything is being refocused on.
Right,
so
okay.
It's been incredibly busy but exciting and sort of future-focused time. From a resourcing point of view, I think pretty much a lean team. I have a lean team working on brands, but where I'm very fortunate to be supported is by some excellent agency relationships, and with those, some really good calibre of people supporting us with our brand transformation. And I think the other thing I'd say is that because brand doesn't get done in isolation from the other marketing activities across the portfolio, it's a joint effort with those that are working on account-based marketing efforts or those that are working on building new websites or dealing with some of our channel marketing requirements as well.
And so if I were to kind of ask the same kind of question, but from an investment perspective, is there a big chunk of the marketing budget right now that is being pushed towards branding?
I think is the answer in short, but actually I think it's a bit of a longer term answer. So what we're looking at is how the budgets that we have available to us in the short term can have impact for the long term. So rather than just thinking only about the in-year revenue and how marketing can drive that, and absolutely every business needs to think about that, particularly in the B2B space we're in, but it's also thinking about how can today's marketing pound invest for the future development of the business, and therefore with it is adding to the brand and the brand's reputation as we move forward.
And how much of the work that you're having to do is about kind of justifying the branding focus in the eyes of the wider Capita business?
A A fair amount, but actually the one thing that I would say is so important to anyone getting into this kind of thing, getting into a branding project internally, whatever size of your business and whatever complexity you have to deal with, is research.
Right.
Research from the outset. Do not undervalue research. Even if you think you know your business inside out, even if it's an owner-managed business and you think you know every customer and everything your business has ever been through, research, research, research. Because what that gives you is a foundation of objectivity. It gives you something that you can use to tell the story of the transformation. Mm. And it gives you something to be able to hook and buy in stakeholders across your business, outside your business, those that are both advocates and those that are considering whether they agree with what you're looking to do. It's just such a great sort of basis to have. And that's where we started, actually. We undertook a huge research program earlier this year. We spoke to clients, we spoke to prospective clients, we spoke to the market, we spoke to our own employees. That gave us a really strong foundation. So when we went into developing the strategy for our brand and then subsequently the identity, it was all underpinned by research that couldn't be argued with.
That's great advice. So if I'm kind of starting out building a set of brand skills as a kind of aspiring marketer, how do I go about learning about how I should research my marketplace?
I think from a learning research point of view, it's about trying the different techniques and using whatever you have at your disposal in the organisation you're in at that time to try those different techniques out and seeing the value of everything from a conversation with one client that can give you a real anecdotal gem right the way through to running some short-term survey work or focus group discussions with clients, with your team members, with your colleagues, and seeing the value you get from that by just debating some of the topics that you're playing with at that time with them. I think the other thing I'd say to an aspiring, particularly somebody wanting to be in brand marketing, yeah, is right at the outset of your career, think about the organisations you join. I think it's really important, if that's the sort of career you want to take, that you kind of cut your teeth, so to speak, with a really established brand where the practices are embedded, where the brand has lots of opportunity for you to grow and learn lots of dimensional skills so that you can then take those on to other organisations of any shape and size. But I think that's a really valuable learning, certainly I had early in my career, that I would pass on to an aspiring marketer.
That's a really good bit of advice. So let's make that practical. So give me a question that I should go into my job interview and ask in order to really get to the nub of whether that business has a brand that would teach me something.
Well, I'd probably start by asking them if they know their brand value, like literal value. So we measure brand asset value, and I would ask them if they know that value. Have they got a number or a price against their brand that gives them an understanding of that brand having a true value to the organisation? I think the other thing is, brand is about inside out for me. So the other question I would ask them is, do they understand their brand promise or the sort of brand purpose of the organisation? Somebody sitting in front of you interviewing for a marketing job should know both, yeah, of those, if that's really true in that organisation.
Great advice. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So we've heard from Sarah that Capita has been focusing on long-term marketing. I'm joined now by UK Head of Strategy at Omo Bono, Simon McAvoy. Simon, hello.
Hello.
Can you tell me, first of all, what's Omo Bono?
Well, Omo Bono, first of all, is the patron saint of business. I don't know if you know this.
Ah, okay.
That's where the funny name comes from.
Ah.
So we are a creative and technology agency.
Right.
And we specialise on business brands. So we do B2B, that's what we do. And we work with all sorts of companies, ranging from the massive and global and multinational right down to scale-ups and startups. And help them kind of solve business problems through creativity and technology.
Business problems like long or short. So
yes.
So I've got to ask you, long or short, where do you stand?
Well, okay, so where do I stand? I guess about 54% short and 46% long.
Okay.
Well,
I'm already getting the sense that Omo Bono is a really precise marketing agency.
Well, look, we've been writing about this work. This is a reference, obviously, to the Burnett and Field work that was published a number of years ago. They've recently recut it for B2B. We've been talking and writing about this for some time. And look, the boring answer is obviously you need to integrate both into a marketing plan. Mm. The more interesting answer is kind of how do you do that? What do those two things mean? And how do you effectively deliver against long and short together? Because actually it's challenging, right? So if we take for a second the kind of the rough hypothesis that short-term stuff is your sales activation, it's kind of how you get people to buy you today, tomorrow, in the next month or so. Mm. And long-term is brand building, as Sarah was touching on earlier. Mm. So what you actually need to think about there is the types of activity that are needed to do both of those things well.
Okay.
And so in the long term, we're looking at more emotive storytelling. We're looking at narrative. We're looking at ideas that will lodge in people's minds. Because fundamentally, the job of long-term brand building is to build that mental availability, right? To build the memory structures around your brand. So the next time somebody's thinking about needing a service like yours, your brand pops into their head.
Okay.
That's the job of it, right?
Okay.
So you're building long-term sales pipeline. The short-term stuff is persuasive, it's rational, it's focused on making the case for why you in the immediate term, right?
Right.
And the thing about that is that's, I think, where a lot of B2B marketing gets focused because it makes a lot of sense, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You persuade people. It's like using marketing like an extension of your sales team.
And it's kind of where, so from a client side perspective, it's where the business always wants me to be, I find. It's, you know,
absolutely,
the salesperson is always saying, well, where's the next lead coming from? And I've never had a salesperson come up to me and say, you know, so what are you doing about brand right now?
No, they don't. Although, interesting, we have had some good sessions working on ABM with sales teams where they say, well, the biggest problem we have is that nobody really knows about us. And you go, yes, well, that's what your brand is for.
Yeah. So they want it, but they don't kind of know that they want it.
That's right. But the difficult thing is with short-term pressures, the tendency will always be to funnel money into what can deliver a result in the next quarter. And
right.
We know this is how businesses work. Right. So it takes extraordinary, I think, courage and guts as a marketer to say, no, look, we're going to start planning for the future here. We're going to build a brand for the future. The good news is there's lots of available data that helps you make that case. And so the Burnett and Field work is the sort of archetype of that, really. Mm. It's absolutely vital that marketers read that.
And so sort of earlier on, you told me about the very scientific split between long and short. But quite seriously, as a marketer, is there a formula that I can apply? How do I work out where, for my business, I should be sitting?
So I would, as a strategist, always say you do a detailed diagnosis of your brand and where you are in the market. So don't rely entirely on third-party models.
So the answer isn't out there.
So the answer is hire a great agency that can do strategic thinking for you, obviously. But I would say, more seriously, there are some rules of thumb here. So if your brand is very new, you can focus more on sales activation. And some of this work is in the work they've done. So you can increase sales activation because, frankly, you need customers and you need to hit them quickly and get runs on the board. Mm. If you're the market leader or a very mature brand, you should really upweight your brand building because you've done the job of making people aware that you exist today. Mm. You just need to make sure they still know you exist in the future and that you matter and mean something and you stand for something. So there's different contexts and situations, different industries have different splits as well. So this is why I say, like, this data is useful. But it's a rule of thumb. Get into a proper diagnosis of your brand and where you sit, and then you can start to make strategic decisions.
Mm. Can you give me some examples of where perhaps businesses you've worked for have found out where they sit on the long-short scale?
So if I'm really honest, I don't think many brands are doing this kind of rigorous stuff yet.
Right.
I think that people are discussing the theory. There are challenges in practice with arriving at that kind of split. I mean, you could, one thing you could be doing straight away is looking at your media spend. So to what extent are you spending money in performance marketing versus to what extent you're spending money in more, shall we say, sort of awareness-driving activity? Because there's interesting things in the data. So, for example, there's a real tension between wide and narrow. So sales activation type activity tends to be precision targeted and focused. It's good to find the person who's in market today. Whereas brand building activity is wide and about fame driving. So there's lots of different dimensions to this. And I think looking at your own media spend and the types of activity you're creating, the types of advertising you're creating, you can start to analyze where you're strong and where you're weak and where you need to invest more.
And when we were talking earlier about this, you also said there was left and right. So perhaps tell me a bit about that as well.
So left and right is, I suppose, the update to this work most recently. It's based on sort of reviving the interest around the left and right brain hemisphere model, which kind of went out of fashion and has come back in fashion thanks to a scholar called Ian McGilchrist, who's published a brilliant book called The Master and His Emissary. And that book inspired a guy called Orlando Wood to write a book called Lemon, which is basically about the preponderance of left brain thinking in the advertising industry and how it's killing creativity and actually reducing effectiveness as a result. And his book is full of charts that show that this is the case. The interesting thing, I want to do a little test with you. The interesting thing about left brain and right brain. So I'm going to read out the left brain characteristics.
Okay.
This is the sort of thing that left brain loves in advertising. You tell me if it sounds more or less like the kind of thing you usually see in B2B, right?
Okay.
So it's flatness, it's abstracted body parts, i.e. just a hand, right, or a face. It's a testimonial style monologue, speaking to camera.
Yeah.
Lots of adjectives used as nouns, right? Find your impossible, that kind of thing. And a rhythmic soundtrack, lots of rhythm and beat and tempo.
It sounds very familiar. I always try in my marketing to include as many various body parts as I possibly can. It's so important.
It is. But then, you know, the flip of the right brain is much more things like story and relationships and sort of instrumental music that's a bit calmer. The right brain responds really well to that.
Mm.
And the right brain is where emotions typically are kind of built. It's what allows us to respond more kind of emotionally. And as a result, we build more memories around a lot of that experience.
Right.
So it's not that left brain's bad and right brain's good. It's just,
again,
we need both. And we have tended towards focusing on the left brain.
Simon McAvoy, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Every family has its ugly duckling, the unloved, unappreciated, ignored and untrendy one, the outcast. The ugly duckling of marketing is B2B marketing, but that's a mistake. In fact, B2B marketing and B2B marketers need to be nurtured and celebrated. 80% of all UK firms derive at least some of their income from B2B. 44% of UK turnover comes from B2B activity. So you ignore this duckling at your peril. There's some great B2B marketing out there, and I'm joined now by marketing and communications lead at L&T Technology, Utkarsh Srivastav, to look at some of it. Utkarsh, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Dave. Pleasure to be here.
So, first of all, you should tell us a bit about L&T Technology. What do they do? What are they about?
Sure. L&T Technology Services is part of Larsen & Toubro Group, headquartered out of India.
Right.
But they are present across Europe and US. Hmm. We help clients realize their digital journey through engineering services.
Okay. And that must mean you've seen quite a lot of B2B marketing stuff out there. What's caught your eye?
So I'll talk about a campaign that we did in Europe in June 2019.
Okay.
We conducted an ER&D hackathon and a bus tour across 9 cities and traveled over 3,000 kilometers in just 16 days.
Okay.
I mean, the idea was to uplift our brand awareness in the European region. And the genesis of the program stems from the fact that the buyers of engineering or IT services may not always have time and bandwidth to travel to offshore location centers to learn more about their service provider competencies.
Okay, so you basically go to them rather than waiting for them to come to you.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. So what is it that impresses you about this?
First and foremost, the project is a silver lining that B2B marketing is not dull, and marketers can use a combination of B2B and B2C techniques to stand out and solve their brand awareness challenges. What we did, basically, we used a technique that is usually widely used by B2C companies for activation of ATL campaigns. At the same time, a couple of B2B product companies are also leveraging bus tour for the road shows of for tech demos, but that's very much limited to product demos. L&T Technology Services took this concept to the next level by adding a hackathon to the mix and organizing roundtables inside the bus. And this model really helped us to address the multiple asks of our business as well as customers through just one breakthrough program.
So how did it work? Did you kind of invite people in the area along to come on the hackathon, or did people just kind of rock up and find that there was this stuff going on?
No, we started 3 months ahead. So we started in the month of March, and we started inviting people to join us for hackathon in Munich, which was the last destination.
Right.
So the tour started from Manchester and ended in Munich. So it traveled through 9 cities.
Mm.
And each stopover, we kind of addressed a specific theme and invited our clients, customers, analysts, advisors, students, even our employees to join us and talk about how they can help us address some of the challenges. We themed it around for the next billion. Mm. And we worked together to kind of develop those solutions towards the end when we arrived in Munich. Over 250 registrations were there for the hackathon, and those students, freelancers, and technical experts joined us to solve 4 challenges to address the challenges for the next billion people will get added to the planet.
So, wow. So you, I can see the direct return that from the hackathon, you get a bit of an answer. But is there a return for the business as well?
Yes, absolutely. Because when we started, the challenge was to uplift the brand awareness as well as drive client engagement. And as I said, there were multiple asks from the business. One was to increase our brand awareness within the client set that we work with, the new prospective clients, as well as we wanted to increase our engagement with local universities, local government officials, analysts, and advisors.
Mm.
Now, if we have multiple programs and we are trying to address these objectives through different programs, it would have been a lot of investments as well as time and effort.
Mm.
So we were looking for one breakthrough program that can address all these issues as well as deliver us the results that we were looking for.
Mm. But I guess I can understand the cost effectiveness of bringing it together, but I guess equally you've got lots of different audiences there, and you've got to be careful that you don't make something so vanilla that actually it loses its appeal for one of those audiences.
So since we had 9 stopovers, we were able to dedicate those stopovers to different audiences.
Right.
And we did not follow a standard agenda for, say, if we are today in Manchester, when we went to Germany in Dusseldorf, and there the agenda was more focused towards chemical industry.
Right. Okay, got it. So what have you learned from this experience? Sounds like you've had a full-on few months. What have you learned from it that you're going to apply for the future?
I think we learn a lot. We learn a lot both on-road and off-road. First of all, the bus tour taught us that outdoor activation is very different from activation you do in events or conferences, and they usually takes place in a controlled environment. I think working with local authorities and securing the best outdoor space that is needed to do a roadshow is the most critical part. And in hindsight, if you look at it, that was the most challenging part for us. And similarly, if you're looking to organize a hackathon, it is not just about framing problem statement and inviting participants to come and solve those challenges. You really need to look at the nuts and bolts. For example, dropout rates are higher when you do a hackathon event. It's as high as 50%.
Wow.
Then again, you don't have a choice but to do the hackathon or a weekend if you really want good quality participation from, say, freelance people who are working professionals.
Yeah.
And then you also need to look at hiring a right hackathon agency who has got the experience to do this. We've got a network of students and freelancers and techno experts. You also need to decide on problem statement, prize money, prepare your mentor and jury members so that they ensure that they understand the motivation of hackathon participants and they themselves participate with the right energy and passion.
Ukash Srivastav, Marketing and Communications Lead at L&T Technology. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave.
Next up, Carla Rivershaw shares a key lesson that she's taken on the journey to being CMO of document technology business Turtle. Carla, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So first of all, you've got to tell us a bit more about Turtle.
Absolutely. So Turtle's mission is to kill the PDF.
Basically, an aggressive stance.
Yeah, it certainly is. Yeah, but it's an achievable one, I think. So basically, what Turtle is a content creation tool to help anybody who wants to create brilliant looking content that's highly interactive, unlike the PDF, which is a very static experience. And then you have all the fantastic analytics on the back end. So particularly as marketers, it's such a powerful tool because you can actually see how your content is performing, as opposed to, I know I have this many downloads, but that doesn't really tell you whether or not people have read the content, for how long, which parts they like, which parts they don't. So basically, that's what Turtle's here to solve.
I'm supposed to be quite impartial, but I can't be when it comes to Turtle. The other bit on that is that once you've got the analytics, you can kind of change the order in which you present the content kind of instantly, right?
Absolutely.
In order to respond to what you're seeing.
Absolutely, yeah. So it's all about kind of real-time editing. So if you see something isn't performing that well, you can swap things around and see whether or not that performs better. So it's a really fantastic tool from that perspective.
Cool. And your CMO, so how did you get there? What is it that's made you the brilliant B2B marketer that you are today?
Oh, gosh, I don't know if I would call myself a brilliant B2B marketer, but thank you. I guess it's a bit of an unusual path, really, for me, because I don't think when I was in school I necessarily thought I'm going to be a marketer one day, or certainly not a B2B marketer. However, I've arrived, and I think when I was back in school, I wasn't really sure exactly what I wanted to do. So I decided to start a law degree. I thought that was a good degree to have, and it would buy me some time to figure out what I want to do once I graduate. And so kind of nearing the end of my degree, I realized I don't think law is necessarily what I want to do as a career. It's been fun, but I think, for one, I don't necessarily want to do even more training, because after the degree you have to do another 2 years of training before you finally qualify. So I didn't really fancy that. Mm. And also the expense. And I just also couldn't really see myself sitting behind a desk reading case law all day, every day. So I was evaluating my options, and marketing actually seemed like quite a fun thing to do, particularly because I've always considered myself quite a creative person. Mm. And so I was sort of looking to see what was going on out there, whether there are any opportunities. And I found it was actually more of a business development role in a company near where I lived. It was a very small company. I think when I joined, it was about 6 people.
Right.
And I sort of come in really enthusiastic after university. I want to do marketing. And they look at me like I'm crazy and say, we're 6 people. I don't think we can justify having somebody just doing marketing here, but feel free to do it in your own time. So that's basically what I did.
Right.
And the lucky thing was, the company I worked for, they were working in the environmental sector. They sold solar panels and that type of thing. And the government at the time was heavily investing in this area. And what that meant was that the company expanded really, really quickly. And suddenly we had a team of, I can't remember, I think it was about 12 salespeople in place. And there was this need to have a marketer dedicated. So that gave me this opportunity quite early on to step into this marketing role. And I mean, obviously, having done a law degree, I had absolutely no experience in this. And I was really figuring it out as I went along. And
right.
I know for sure I made a lot of mistakes. But, you know, that's fine. You learn from these
sure.
things. And so I just picked things up as I went along. And I was fortunate enough that they ended up paying for me to get my marketing qualifications. So I did that for a couple of years. And I decided after that I wanted to go somewhere bigger. And so I had my sights set on getting a job in London, because this was in Kent somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so I was looking for different roles. And then a role came up with Thomson Reuters.
Okay.
And this was actually a maternity cover contract. So it certainly wasn't something that was necessarily guaranteed to be permanent. But mm-hmm. I thought it would be great to get my foot in the door. So I basically kind of went in with the attitude, I want to stay here. And so I'm going to do everything I can to make this a success. So I was brought in as like a product marketing manager, and I was certainly doing that role, but I was also looking around to see what else can I do, because I was obviously very aware of the fact that at some point the person I'm covering would be coming back and would want her job back. So I kind of had to create a role for myself. So, I just got involved in lots of different things. In a particular area I noticed where there was a gap was around sort of content marketing and social media. And like they were creating quite a lot of thought leadership, but not necessarily doing very much with it. And so I decided, right, I think we need to have like a central point where we can collect all of this content. And so I decided to launch a blog for the company. And that was actually really, really successful. And so by the time the contract came up to an end, the company said, well, you know, we really need you to stay because you need to manage the blog and you need to manage our social channels. Yeah. And so they basically offered me a permanent role at that point. And that was kind of, I guess, indicative of what I continued to do then throughout my time at Thomson Reuters. So I was there for 6 years in the end.
Wow, okay, right.
And
so start out with a maternity contract and stay for 6 years. That's quite something.
Yeah, exactly. And so it really, my role just constantly evolved while I was there. And I think I really put that down to just constantly looking to see where there were areas that needed to be fixed, because there were just a lot of things that weren't necessarily working very well. So I think the next thing I did after that was I noticed that there was a really big gap in between marketing and sales, which is quite normal, I think, in most organizations anyway. But I really, like, I was in a situation at that time where I didn't even really know who my sales stakeholders were.
Right.
And so I'm like, right, I need to figure out who these people are. I need to make sure they understand they have a marketing team, where we are and what we're doing. And I want to understand what they're doing and how we can help them do their jobs better and make them more successful. So I started to build those relationships with those guys. And then I started to get curious about what about the wider organization, because I was just thinking about the sales guys in London, and I thought, well, I also want to know about the salespeople in the rest of the world, and what about the marketing people in the rest of the world that I don't know? And so I started to figure out who all these people were and start to build those relationships with them. And for a lot of them, they'd never been contacted by somebody in the central team, and they just thought it was fantastic somebody was making this effort to do so.
Sorry to interrupt, but I guess you've used the word a couple of times as you've been talking to me, but curiosity is something that's really coming to the fore here. You kind of moved into your first role, and you had to be kind of intensely curious about how to find a place for marketing. Mm-hmm. And the maternity contract, you had to be curious about other kind of inroads to staying at Thomson Reuters. You had to then explore the wider customer stakeholder market. So curiosity is coming through time and time again.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's just crucial when you're navigating your career. I mean, assuming that you are ambitious and you do want to go places, then I think you've got to be curious, because if you just stick to what your role is within the confines of that, then, you know, nobody's going to say you're doing a bad job, but they're never going to really think of you as the person to offer the next opportunity to, because you're not putting yourself out there. So I think, yeah, you have to be really curious. And I definitely think that that's helped me to constantly make these jumps within my career.
And does that apply at Turtle?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think going from a big corporate environment like Thomson Reuters to somewhere that's a lot smaller like Turtle, I mean, you have to be, because now I own all of marketing. So it's not just a very small part. I have to be constantly thinking about all of the things we're doing and how everything is working and which bits are good and which bits aren't so good and how we can optimize these things. And the only way you're going to do that is if you're constantly curious. Like, I don't think you can succeed in that role if you aren't constantly questioning things and trying to make things better.
So for those people who are kind of starting out on their marketing career and thinking, well, this has to be a quality that I go about developing, what would you advise them to do? Can you develop curiosity?
I mean, I think it is definitely a soft skill. It's not necessarily something that you can go on a course and learn. But I don't think it's necessarily a hard skill to have. It's just being aware of your surroundings, really. And I guess the challenge and the trap that a lot of marketers face is that we're always so busy and we're running around trying to just stay on top of the day-to-day. You don't have time to think about things that are beyond. But I really do encourage everybody to make that time because it is so important, even if it is in your spare time outside of work, just to even just spend time thinking about what's going on in the wider organization you're in and think about how you could add value to that. Like, it's amazing the opportunities that can open up from that.
But it takes courage as well, because you know, it's not just about time, it's about sort of having the courage to kind of admit there are things you don't really know.
Definitely. But you know what? I think, like, everybody that is successful goes into situations where there is so much unknown for them. I mean, it's like the whole imposter syndrome thing. Nobody really thinks they can do the job they're doing,
exactly,
but they just do it.
Yeah.
And you just, I guess the sort of the secret is you just don't let on that you don't know what you're doing half the time, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it does take a lot of courage, but I mean, the amount of times I've taken these steps into roles that just scare the living daylights out of me, honestly. But I know that I will figure out a way to make it happen. So, yeah, it definitely does take courage.
Carla Weir, for sure. CMO Turtle, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that's it. That's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Clubcast. We're out of time. My thanks to my guests, Sarah Ford, Simon McAvoy, Akash Srivastav and Carla Rivershaw. And thanks to you as well for listening. Please let us know what you think of our podcast today, what you've liked, and more importantly, what we can do better. You can contact us at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. That's businessmarketingclub.org.uk. And what are the chances? That's also the address to use if you want to contact us and you're interested in taking part in future podcasts. We welcome all views, all thoughts and all experiences here. Or if you've got ideas for what you'd like us to cover in the future. And it's also the address to use if you'd like to find out more about the Business Marketing Club, which is a network for B2B marketers run by B2B marketers for passion, not profit. We're here to support the B2B marketing profession overall. The Business Marketing Club is behind this podcast, and we also run events and mentoring programs for UK-based B2B marketers. So if you're working in business-to-business marketing or thinking of working in business-to-business marketing or just interested in business-to-business marketing, we are for you. It doesn't matter whether you're just starting out or whether you've been in the profession for decades, whether you're a CMO or a marketing executive, whether you're client side or agency side, whether you're based in London or Longeaton. It doesn't matter. We've got something to support you. We are the only sector agnostic support network for B2B marketers in the UK run by B2B marketers. We run regular events and networking meetups for marketers based in London, Nottingham, Newcastle, Bristol and Manchester. And you can access the latest events calendar and sign up for events at our site, businessmarketingclub.org.uk. And if you don't want to have to be a member to come along to one of our events, you can sign up for an event that particularly interests you. Or if you want to be an annual member, that entitles you to attend any Business Marketing Club event that we run throughout a 12-month period. And in London alone, we've got a club event that happens every single month with lots of content and networking opportunities there. So look us up at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. Oh, and when you do contact us, please mention that you found us through the podcast so that we know that's been a really, really successful mechanism for getting our word out there. That's it. I'm Dave Stevens. Thanks very much for listening.